One way, you know, very sort of heuristic and intuitive way of looking at it is that basically we can look at the Feynman diagram expansion of a path integral with some sort of action like this. So you have action. Where basically these five fields are matrices. And so simple matrices with two indices, nothing fancy. And so basically if we do a Feynman diagram expansion, we can use the rules like show that so the propagator would just have would just be represented by this two-stranded line, which basically carry matrix indices, AIJ. And the interaction vertex here, trivalent interaction vertex, will be represented by, obviously, like that, by the interaction vertex like this. And so very intuitively here, what we can see is that basically this is in a way represents a dual triangulation for the triangulated two-dimensional surface, which basically means that we can identify each interaction vertex with a triangle, which are then glued in all possible ways across these propagator lines. And when we do the Feynman diagram expansion, we just, you know, sum of all possible ways of gluing these triangles. And basically this is the basic idea, and then, you know, which basically serves as a source for many other approaches like group field theories, which basically they, what they're doing is they just go up in combinatorial dimensions, and instead of talking about matrix models, they consider tensor models with, say, n indices, which then, you know, can be represented as an n-stranded lines, you know, and so like n strands, and then which and then, you know, you can again write a Feynman diagram expansion of your path integral, and basically which is equivalent to the summing of all topologies and all possible gluings of your n synthesis using the tools for triangulating n manifolds. So basically that's the idea, and so these matrix models are like a toy model, so they provide us with a way to sort of study and maybe find some of the behavior of those, you know, high-dimensional tensor models on these sort of more basic examples. So now I want to talk in the next part of my project, which was basically the functional randomization method. So why do we want to use this method, and what is the idea behind it? So, so functional randomization group methods were, you know, I mean, it's a method, you know, that was developed in the framework of simple standard quantum field theory, and which basically works quite well there. And here, so what we do is, I mean, it's in this case we just use the same method that we use for quantum field theory. We just use in this matrix model setting. So I'm just going to briefly review what the functionalization group method is and how it works. So, in quantum field theory, the thing that we're interested in is a partition function, and which is the same as this, and which can be represented by the path integral. And so, in the case of the main idea behind the functional normalization group method is that we want to consider an infinitesimal change in the partition function with the each infinitesimal shell, momentum shell, that where our fluctuations are. So we don't average over all fluctuations in the same time, but we can see that these infinitesimal changes in the partition function as we go through the incrementing over momentum shells, successive momentum shells. So how do we implement it? So we implement it by sticking some regulator term in here, which this regulator term gives us dependence on the scale p, and it just where our k is a specifically chosen regulator function, which in a way can be actually any function you want, as long as it satisfies some basic conditions, like I think there are actually three of them, and so these three conditions. So basically, the first one implements an infrared cutoff, which, because basically what it gives us the fact that basically in the momentum, the fluctuations below some particular value of momentum are suppressed with basically k squared term in here, which is kind of mass-like. So this condition gives us the fact that for high momentum fluctuations, they basically they don't feel this regulator function at all. So it doesn't really influence them at all. And and the last one is just basically the it's bare. If you take this the Bayesian scale to infinity, it's a condition. So as long as it satisfies these three conditions, we can choose whichever function we want as a regulator. So then one can then introduce the effective average action, which is going to be dependent on scaling. So let me introduce it here just for completeness, so that everything is defined. And so this is the effective average action, and is given by basically and we know that if k goes to zero, this effective average action goes to the standard effective action for point theory. So then we can either derive an equation for the evolution of this effective average action in the theory space. So this equation is the so-called flow equation, and is given by this.
If you write it like that, then you need a 1/2.
You mean here? Correct. And this is basically super trace over this operator. So it's an operator trace, not a matrix. So this basically allows us to split our problem that we're considering here into a problem of given an initial condition and using this flow equation, we can represent our flow of the effective average action in the theory space, where, so basically this is the effective action that we have, so for quantum theory, and this is some initial condition, which quite often is just bare action. And then we can evolve this according to the flow equation in the theory space from here up to here.
Sorry, what is the delta or gamma key?
So this is just a scale derivative, so basically it's k dk. Scale derivative. And yeah, it's the same here. So how can we practically implement this problem? So the usual practical approach to this is to write some sort of ansatz for the effective average action in terms of operators, and then use this flow equation to obtain beta functions for the coupling constants that you use in your answers. So this is what's called the truncation method. So, and this is the method that we use in our project. So now I want to go into what sort of answers and what sort of models we consider, because basically the model is in a way determined by what sort of effective average action we use. And so in our project we considered two non-commutative geometries, and there is a general theory of non-commutative spaces, which was developed by Alan Kohn. And but here we consider sort of, we do the construction in sort of ad hoc way without going into the details of a general construction of non-commutative geometry. So because we just consider simple case of the fuzzy sphere and the fuzzy torus, and so how do we, can we construct the fuzzy sphere? So what we have a simple commutative sphere, that's true, and which is given by a formula like that, where axes are the coordinates. So to construct a fuzzy sphere from here, let's zoom in, we just promote this, instead of replace this x coordinates by 3 and by n Hermitian matrices. These are matrices, which then obey a commutation relation. Right. So, which is sort of where here Cn is a Casimir operator. So, which is sort of similar to the angular momentum operators in a way. And so these three n by n Hermitian matrices generate an algebra of matrices, n by n complex matrices on the fuzzy sphere. And this algebra can be decomposed into irreducible representations of S of 3. So it's thank you. So, which basically says that we have a UV cutoff built in into our theory a priori, because if in the case of the commutative sphere, you just have usual spherical harmonics, where L and M range from 0 up to infinity, here we have an inbuilt cutoff on this L. And so to finish my introduction of the phase sphere, I would also want to draw attention to the fact that the Laplace operator on the phase sphere is given by the double commutator on these generators. So it's the sum here is implied where it's. So this is one of the models that we had considered. And the other model is the fuzzy torus. And it's in a way similar. So here it's given, it's generated by two matrices, the sort of clock and shift matrices. So one of them is, so you have zeros on all of them everywhere, and then you have ones on this upper diagonal, and then you have one here. And you also have here, you have this, which is a 1, 2, 2 to the minus 1, where Q is the nth root of 1. And so these two matrices, they end by n matrices, they obey the commutation relation. And they also generate an algebra of n by n complex matrices on the fuzzy torus. And in this case, they can be also decomposed into harmonics, which are basically the Vm and then range from 0 to n minus 1. So, yeah, and so we again have a cut off as well. So, and also, the Laplace operator is given by the same formula, where here x's here are just given by, so u is given by x1 plus ix2, where x1 and x2 are Hermitian matrices, and v are given by x3 plus x4. So you have these four matrices, which then again combine to give you a Laplace operator on the fuzzy torus.
When you talk about the Laplace operator,
yes.
Do you mean in some limit that gives you the usual Laplace operator?
Yes, I think, yeah, if you take n to large, in the limit of large n, so large matrices, you're going to get a right operator, the commutative operator. So, okay. So now I'm just going to talk about what sort of models we actually considered in our project. So, on the fuzzy sphere, we considered very simple truncation, which was given by gamma k is right, so we just have simple, so the mass term and the alpha to the 4. And where basically we know, so the Laplace is given by the formula that I gave before. This trace is a simple metric trace here. And so the scale of the mass term, which is k squared, is chosen in such a way that the propagator in the flow equation so this propagator is diagonal. So that's much very, very much simplifies the calculations. And the scale of the coupling of this phi to the 4 term is chosen in such a way so we impose a homogeneity condition on the beta functions that we apply that we obtain from the flow equation applied to this entity. So we demand that the beta functions are independent of the scale k, and that gives us the determines uniquely the value for the scaling of the phi to the 4 term.
That's the case 3, the scaling you are talking about?
Sir?
The scaling you are talking about is k to the power 3?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's beta is 3.
Right. Which is coincidentally the scaling that the initial convert, for example, used in its Monte Carlo simulation. But yeah. Here it just comes out of the frequency of the machine.
The beta function, yes. So, so this model that we have analyzed and obtained the beta functions for and found the fixed points. So, I can show you a general qualitative picture of the phase diagram for this model that we have obtained. It is given by so this is a B lambda plane. So, and so then you have a Gaussian point, a fixed point, here, and then you have non-trivial fixed point here. And yeah, we have obtained some numbers for this fixed point. And then we see that when you plot the flow vectors, that this whole phase diagram space splits into three phases. So you have three phases, and you so basically you see that the flow vectors go like that, which basically means that basically if you are in this region, then if you follow the flow vectors, you're going to stay in this region. So we identify this as three different phases in our theory. And one can actually look at it in a heuristic manner. So if you look at the potential here, then you can see that so it basically can contain two minima, if this term is negative, right? So, and these two minima allow us to so heuristically analyze this phase diagram. So we're just saying that so if you look at the eigenvalues and the eigenvalues of matrix field, then we can see that so in one case, you know, the spread of the eigenvalues given by this repulsive interaction here is not enough to overcome this potential, you know, barrier, and then they're all clustered in one well or in the other, right? And then this is this situation we identify with the situation of a uniform ordered phase, so which is here. So this is a uniform order phase, and so in a way one can make an analogy with a basically magnetized ferromagnet. So then, in the other case, this repulsion between eigenvalues is be enough to overcome this potential well, and then we basically have some cluster here and some cluster here, which gives us a non-uniform ordered phase, which on the phase diagram is given by this region. So And this also can be, you know, sort of understood, you know, in like in ferromagnet case, as when you basically you have unmagnetized ferromagnet. So you still have these regions, you know, the right domains, which are still magnetized in some way, but they are microscopic. And basically on the macroscopic scale, you have unmagnetized materials. And so the last one is basically when you have elements outside of this potential well here. And this is the disorder phase that you have here. So it's a disorder phase. And basically, yeah, just in the ferromagnetic case, it's when you go above the Curie temperature, and you just have unmagnetized materials. So yeah, so this, so it sort of makes sense, you know, in a way of this, you know, heuristic, you know, way. But we actually can see it from just plotting the flow of this, you know, of this coupling constants obtained from the flow equation. So other things that we did, so we played a bit with this model, and for example, we added the, we tried to take into account all first loop effects. So because here you, so in the first loop you already generate the multi-trace operators on the right-hand side of the flow equation. So basically, yeah, so and then we try to include them into back into truncation and study the what you can get. And we can see that if when you enlarge the truncation, the numbers for like the fixed point obviously change, but the qualitative features from the phase diagram stay more or less the same as to obtain three phases. That's what you see. So now I want to talk a little bit about the fuzzy torus model that we considered.
Can I have a question?
Yep.
So when you analyze the beta functions, did you restrict to some planar sector?
Sorry?
The beta functions you analyzed in order to draw this diagram.
Yes.
Were they planar beta functions, or only were they the beta functions also with non-planar contributions?
Well, yeah, non-planar. That's just full.
For the ones that when you use the simplest truncation, then you just have beta contributions because you have single traces going into single trace at one loop. So there you just have beta contributions. But as soon as you enlarge the truncation to have multi-trace operators in the truncation, then at one loop they flow back with non-planar local phase contribution to the single trace operators. And so they are in the more complicated truncations they're included.
Yes, it's a feature of this simple truncation that here basically, so you sort of, yeah, so you do generate, you don't generate on the right-hand side the multi-trace operators because it just, yeah, it's this simple truncation.
The problem is that with these multi-traces is that sometimes they give you a non-planar contribution, but sometimes they actually can bounce back with your planar contribution.
Yes, that is precisely.
And if you use a more complicated truncation, can you separate between the cases when you, these multi-traces conspire to give you a planar contribution or when they give you a non-planar one? Is there any way to see, to identify which is the planar contribution and the non-planar contribution?
There is always this this thing that also was that's happening in the Weaker model, that the planar contributions are enhanced by a factor of k squared in this case. In this case by a factor of k for the which of the k squared. And that is because you have when you write that, because in the flow equation you have an homomorphism trace, and when you rewrite that in terms of matrix traces, you have a trace, you have in the planar case a trace over one that is left over, and in the non-planar case you just have, you don't have this extra trace over one. that is good.
Yes, and so the other one that we have considered here is a fuzzy toys one, and there we actually, so the model is similar, but we include, so this is a fuzzy toys one, so it's basically sort of the similar model with the inclusion of the Ansel Laplacian operator, which is given by this. So the idea is basically, in the fuzzy sphere case, this operator is not distinguished from the Laplacian operator. They're not distinguished. And so basically, it is still generated, but it's just because of the fuzzy sphere, you know, it's just the same. But in the fuzzy torus case, you actually have to include this intertruncation because they're actually different. And another way to actually look at it is that also, you know, in the Ghost of Vulcan conversation, it was shown that it is actually possible to renormalize it, so basically solve the problem of the UVR with inclusion of this term which breaks the translation invariance in the action. So if you include this term, then Ghost and Kunti have showed that you can actually renormalize your theory. And so that's why we actually looked at the fuzzy torus in the case of including this operator. And one particular case that we studied is the self-dual case, where basically this coefficient is finding in such a way with compared to this one that you are just left with the mass term, sort of mass term in your truncation. So your truncation becomes like that. So this is basically the two main models that we have considered, and to analyze them, we actually used model independent approach. So what we did is we expanded everything in the eigenfunctions of Laplacian. So and basically, so that you know, when you have the endomorphism trace on the right hand side of the flow equation, you use this expansion to sort of reduce this expansion to evaluate this trace in a more independent way by just, you know, expanding the eigenfunctions of the Laplacian image, whatever they are. And also we used in the regulator, as a regulator function, we used a very simple and optimal ansatz here, where we inserted for x the Laplace of the k squared. So this is the regulator that we used for our analysis. So this way we could actually obtain the model independent equations from the flow equation, and which then, yeah, we just inserted the concrete, you know, expressions for, say, traces of x squared and, you know, for the Casimir and so on, to obtain actual beta functions in each case of each model. So basically this sort of allowed us to see that the model dependence only actually counts on the level of the symmetry considerations. So that, you know, which operators are identified with which and what sort of truncation we can make out of what sort of operators. And so this was sort of an interesting conclusion of that analysis. And so one other thing that also was interesting is that we actually, so one of the reasons, one of the motivations for this project were the Monte Carlo simulations of the scalar fields and the scalar field theory on the Fizeau sphere, which were done by Denzel Okono. And so, and he actually was kind enough to explain to us what it is that they were doing. And so, and his results were very much similar in a way that the phase diagram structure was very similar to the one that we were able to obtain here from this simple flow equation considerations, even in this, you know, basically minimal truncation. We were already able to obtain the qualitative features of the phase diagram corresponding to these Monte Carlo simulations. We understand that if you enlarge the truncation, you can quite possibly obtain a better accuracy in the numerical values for the fixed point in the like when you project out on the lambda v plane of your enlarged truncation. So, but we think that the qualitative features and the model will still be the same as we obtained with this very simple and short truncation. So, yeah, so in conclusion, yeah, I want to thank the Perimeter Institute for the opportunity to do this research here, and yeah, thanks for your attention. Yeah, any questions?
So again, what happened with that commutator in the Fizeau sphere case?
See, the x squared in the Fizeau sphere just turns into Casimir, so this I squared turns.
So it's just a master.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
It just becomes like a master.
Master.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you know the connection between the Fizeau sphere and the, like the standard non-commutative force in non-commutative geometry? Or Fizeau torus, sorry.
What do you mean, like non-commutative torus or Fizeau torus? Because we actually considered the Fizeau torus, which was a much, you know, simpler than the actual, you know, conic construction of non-commutative torus.
Because it seems very similar to the conic construction the generators end up looking very similar. So it might be
I think the cons construction, you know, it has more, you know, complicated the Laplace operator on the in the cons case is more complicated. It's a more complicated structure. Okay.
Yeah.
I have another question. So you're mentioning the thing with the double web potential and the eigenvalues. The eigenvalues of the matrix phi, I imagine.
Yes.
How did you study that?
Just a picture, you know, to explain why you can sort of...
You know the computation behind it.
No, I mean, you know the computation behind that. It's the usual thing that you write when you're able to neglect the kinetic term. You can write the...
That's exactly the point when you forget about the box. So when you forget about the first...
When you forget about the box, then then you diagonalize this, you just get it by the Monte term, and then I give some proportion of eigenvalues. And
but then I was wondering if this picture actually survives when you take into account the.
Actually, the box can be put in perturbatively. This is what they have found in the Monte Carlo simulations, that the box really just gives an additional spread to the eigenvalue.
Yeah,
I think
it gives a bit of additional proportion.
Yeah. So for qualitative understanding, you can basically treat this as a small perturbation. In the calculations, it actually makes a difference when it's there.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. That's the point. If you don't have it from the beginning, you don't really know how to regulate the signal. So it's very weird what RQ you put. If you have it, then your RQ depends on the spectrum of this guy, and you can do your signals.
Right, right. The thing is, this truncation is also very natural. If you look at if you were to take this box just to construct the regulator for Q matrix models, then the water entities will tell you that you would have to contain at least this operator, and then higher dimensional operators as well.
Yeah,